let me just welcome you and say that what we did last time, we looked at the steps, the process, the path of providing feedback, and we did it in a way that I was really pleased with and that I experienced as thorough. And the result is that we didn't quite get to look at the action plan part, and I suggested that we do it today. Then when I saw that the topic for today is responding to challenges with empathy, meeting challenges with empathy, I thought to myself that I like it, because then we can really get more deeply into all the things that come up and then come back to the action plan towards the end of the class and see how the deeper connection that providing empathy enables to have more connection, more mutual understanding, more of a sense of shared goals will make it easier to come up with an action plan. So that's what I'm intending to do today. And before I go anywhere, I would like to know, since I have a sense that we covered so much last time, I would like to know if there are any questions or comments on what we did last time. And also, I would like to hear from people how your explorations with your empathy buddy are unfolding, what you're learning, any questions that you have, insights. So it's kind of like very open to hear from you.
Hi. I am feeling decidedly overwhelmed and disconnected from the end of the session last time, and would really love a recap. I'm thinking to myself, my goodness, where would I even begin to start to get a hold of what we did last time?
Uh-huh. So you would really like a recap of the whole thing that we covered last time?
Summary recap would be great. And where we left off as a jumping off point, a place I could land, would be really helpful.
Thank you. I am curious to see if that's a desire that's shared by others that
okay.
will help me frame it. I'm not going to not support you if no one else wants it. It's just how to do it. There is definitely a few other people. Thank you for everyone who expressed your opinion. In a way, what we did last time is kind of like the heart of the matter, in the sense that in the first session, we kind of like looked at the context of why we want to do feedback and what are the challenges in doing feedback. In the second session, we looked at how we shift and come to a place of really grounding ourselves in the intentionality that makes feedback useful. So in a way, both of these sessions are preparatory for what the last session was, which is kind of like the actual step-by-step of how you approach feedback giving in ways that I believe increase the chances that the feedback giving will be mutually beneficial, which is my hope anytime I want to give feedback, that it will provide learning and support for the other person, and in that way will also support both the relationship and the shared goals that we have if it's in a work context. I will just review the steps. The first step is, no matter what the context of the relationship is we check to see if there is willingness to receive feedback. That's a place where there are often errors that people make, in the sense of assuming that just because I am the boss and you are the employee, that means I can just offer you feedback any old time when you're not necessarily ready for it. So that's the first one, and we especially looked at the particular challenge of what it means when you want to offer feedback to someone where you don't have that kind of a relationship. The next step, if it's in a formal feedback process, I looked at the possibility of asking the person to provide feedback to themselves. which allows us to know where we are, have a sense of mutuality, and also gives me a context for where the person is and helps me frame the feedback in a way that will speak to where the person is. The next step is the feedback itself, which has four components, two of which are most important in my mind. One is to ground the feedback in a specific and concrete observation. Without evaluation, without vague generalizations, to look at specific and concrete instances that you can point to, which really helps in taking it in and integrating it, because without it, the person might not even know what you're talking about. And link that to why this matters. What is the significance of this? And you link it to something that is beyond like or not like, and definitely not to a should. You link it to something that you want for the team, for the organization, for the relationship, for the person's well-being, etc. Why this matter? Why this matters? And this generally tends to link it to what in the NBC language we tend to call needs. And then the two other components, the third is the emotional effect of the actions, which sometimes there's no need to do it. Sometimes it can really be helpful for the person to really grasp how their actions affect others. Since many of us don't have any sense that we matter, knowing how it affects other people is absolutely key to being able to grasp that our actions matter, even if we know why it matters. So sometimes knowing the emotional effect adds. And the last component is offering clear and concrete suggestions for how you want the person to handle the piece that you said. And it's not necessarily always obvious that the person will know what to do if you don't tell them what to do. Because sometimes the suggestion is a specific outcome. And sometimes the suggestion is how to go about making the improvement. So, for example, if, let's say, the feedback that you want to give someone is that they don't respond to email as fast as you like, and that not only you but others in the organization, this is holding things up, you know, you might offer the suggestion to respond right away. I'm hard-pressed to believe that someone who has not been responding will suddenly respond just because of being told. So I would more likely offer them a suggestion that would be a process suggestion of what they can do to learn in this area. So, for example, I can ask them to, at the end of the day before they go home, review which emails they responded to and which not, and see if they can understand why and why not, something like that. And then this is where empathy comes in. After, at any point in time, the person may have challenges in receiving the feedback, and we can support them with empathy, which is what we will be focusing on today. And then after all that happens, we negotiate an action plan with the person, and that's something that we didn't actually cover last time. That's something I am intending to get to today. So I would like to know, was this helpful?
Yes. Gives me the big picture. Then I can land in and go, okay, where are we now? Kind of like a map.
Great. Thank you. Okay, I would like to get into the material for today. In the first part of it, I want us to connect a bit. It is especially outside the, you know, hardcore NBC community, the idea of giving feedback, of offering empathic presence to the person receiving feedback may appear odd. After all, let's say if I'm the boss, I'm giving you feedback, theoretically, quote-unquote, you're supposed to just do it. And so I would like to open up, ask you, what are your thoughts? Why would it be important to be available, to be in empathic presence with a person that we're offering feedback to? Why might we want to do that? What can we gain?
The thing that comes up for me is sometimes receiving feedback can be such an emotional experience that without that empathy, they may be so caught up in the emotions of the moment that they may not be able to hear the full process.
Yeah, and why might it be emotionally difficult? Why would receiving feedback be emotionally difficult?
Well, I name one person who didn't grow up with some form of self-criticism. A lot of workplaces, I think, don't have a healthy system of feedback. So if anything is given, you know, usually the first assumption is, oh, I did something wrong, and someone's being critical of me.
Yes. So I'm appreciating that you're saying this. Most of us grow up in such a context of pervasive criticism that even if I offer my feedback without intention to criticize, even if I follow all the ABCs, even if I link the feedback to my needs, even if I offer suggestions, even if I am fully observational, it could still be filtered through shame or self-judgment. And I have long had the insight that self-judgment is not an environment in which learning can happen, which was shocking when I realized this, considering that schools produce self-judgment and schools are supposed to be places where learning happens. So the irony and the paradox of this are quite painful. So that's one piece. Thank you. I'm wondering if anyone has any other thoughts about why might we want to respond empathically to someone that we are giving feedback to?
Fear.
Fear.
Fear of losing a job, fear of the unknown as a result of what is being told to the person about the situation in which they were involved.
Yeah, so again, if I am able to receive empathically that fear, then the person can settle and then we can work together more effectively. Thank you.
So that person might appear to agree to what we're asking them, but if they're doing it out of compliance rather than a real desire to contribute, then there can be all kinds of unintended consequences to that.
Yeah. This is really interesting that you are thinking that this is similar. I see this as different. At least the way that I understood what Gail said is fear that might just interfere with the flow of communication. And what I'm hearing you is fear that takes the form of pretending to be okay. This, if people in positions of management and power could grasp that the surface layer, yes, that they get from people is ultimately undermining their own goals, we will get a long way towards functioning differently in the world. So what I am hearing and what you're saying is profound for me. It has to do with wanting the experience of feedback giving to turn into a shared holding of a goal rather than a command. That's what you intended, isn't it?
Yes, that is. Yes.
Thank you.
When I think about, you know, being there for somebody with empathy, what I get with that as well is that person, if it was myself, would feel that I mattered and that my work mattered.
Yeah.
And that would engage me much more than if I just felt I was being told what to do. So it has a lot to do with mattering and with being respected. And that naturally would open me up to receiving that, any feedback I might get.
Thank you. I would like to add two more pieces to this. I cannot improve on what you said. Thank you. Not that I was improving on other people. I don't have a sense of having anything to add. It feels very complete. And then the two other things that I want to add. One is that the person can be fully on board and still be overwhelmed with trying to figure out how to implement the suggestions. And empathic connection can really help free up creativity for us to work together to find the solution. And the last one, which to me is of really crucial importance and that people forget about, is that unless I'm able to receive the person and listen with interest to their experience, their perceptions of the situation and all of that, I am going to be locked in my own view of the world, and there won't be any feedback loop within the feedback, which means whatever wisdom there may be in the other person is lost. So in a way, if I'm the boss, my empathic interest in you is a way to open the door for you to give me your wisdom. And that's something that I also want us all to remember. That's all by way of the why. And before moving to the how, I would like to see if anybody has any questions or comments or any last minute anything about the why.
I just wanted to double check, because what we've been speaking about has been a boss speaking to the employee. And I am assuming that these same points that you just said and that everybody shared applies in a colleague-to-colleague situation.
Yes, it does. The reason I emphasize the boss is that in the boss situation, the person giving the feedback is less likely to remember the importance of empathy. When we are colleagues, there is no background unconscious assumption that I'm right. There may be the kind of like habitual I'm right that I carry by virtue of being human growing up in this society, but I'm going to assume in the background that you also have your own I'm right and will duke it out, quote unquote. If I'm the boss, I'm going to assume that I am right and I have a right to be right and you don't have a right to your truth. Unless I have consciously developed the capacity to be open to your experience. This is why I was focusing on this. Wondering if this resonates for you.
It does very much. Thank you.
I mean, I'm pushing the point. I'm making it a little crude because I have a sense that sometimes by really pushing a point, you can really kind of like uncover subtle dynamics that otherwise remain obscure to everyone. So I'm appreciating your bringing up this question. I actually am curious to check with Lorraine, who has a lot of experience working with organizations, if you have any thoughts about what I just shared.
The one thing that I think is a bit revolutionary in what we're talking about here that I haven't seen in organizations yet is this notion that feedback giver is open to be transformed. That's new.
Glad for that. Thank you. Okay, now that we know that there is so much value to the possibility of providing empathy, I want to now look at what might make it difficult to shift focus from feedback to empathy, both for the person giving it and for the person receiving it. What might make it challenging to know how to navigate?
What would be challenging to me is if in the course of giving empathy that it uncovered more intense emotional response from somebody that I felt capable of handling, of knowing what to do with.
Yeah, and related to that is also the question of how comfortable would the person receiving the feedback and the empathy, oh, we just lost Karen. That is so sad, because I'm responding to her. I think I want to put on hold my response in the hopes that she'll come back quickly and take Susan's comment and then come back to Karen in a moment.
I can imagine that you might be impatient, really wanting to share what you have to say, and that anxiousness to get to really what you wanted to convey might get in the way of you realizing that the person you're talking to is not really in a place to receive the feedback.
Yes. So the piece that Susan brought up really is handled through grasping the relationship between the purpose at hand and the empathy. Because it's almost like there's a paradox. I want to be fully relaxed and open to the person that I'm with, and I want to be fully focused on purpose. And how to hold the tension between the two is part of the art of providing empathy. This is particularly difficult for people who have a lot of NVC experience, that there's a way in which empathic connection, the process of empathy, can be so engaging that it's hard to maintain focus. And that's the opposite of what Susan brought up. So in a way, what I want is to remember that in the context of feedback giving, empathy is secondary, fully open and secondary. And so that brings me to a place of wanting to really be vigilant about what I'm doing and why. So if I am going towards empathy with you, I want to remember to notice when the particular piece that we were connecting about is complete, and I can come back. So that I am not going to work with you on healing everything in your history up until today. I'm going to work with you on connect with you only about whatever is necessary to make the feedback digestible and to make the connection occur in the moment.
One thing that I've noticed in my workplace is some people are so starved to anyone pay attention to what they think or feel, that once you start empathizing with them, it keeps coming and coming and coming. And I do that tension of wanting to be there for the person, but at the same time, having a job to do and having other pressing concerns, that can cause some tension within me.
Great. So let me speak to that a bit more, which is, I totally recognize what you're talking about. I think all of us are starved. I have yet to meet a person who has been heard, fully heard to their satisfaction in life, considering how our society is structured. Towards that end, I want to be mindful of how I do empathy so that I am receiving what is said instead of doing it in a way that invites more. And sometimes it's subtle, and it may be that I won't get it quite so. At least I want to have that intention in me, and I have a sense, a belief that that intention can support both parties in staying focused. So it's like my intention is not to be there for the other person. I think that those words provide a clue. My intention is to hear what's necessary to be heard for us to be able to function together. As soon as we are done covering the context, I want us to roll our sleeves and practice empathy, and then I can hopefully show you, based on specific situations, if you remember them, how you can actually word things in a way that encourages more or less. So let me get back to the point that Karen raised, which is the point about vulnerability. That is the point, yes? I just want to make sure that I'm tracking accurately.
Yes, that's not the word that I used, but it would be about an intense emotional response.
So that whole context I want to speak about, which is considering that we live in a culture in which empathic responses are the exception, not the norm. Both parties may have discomfort. That's one piece that I wanted to say. It's not just the person giving the empathy. It's both people may not know how to handle what might happen. So I want to be aware of both of what I am able to handle and on what the other person is able to handle. And when I am responding empathically, I have some say in how deep, because the NVC form of empathy is guessing feelings and needs. I have a lot of choice about what I guess. So, for example, if somebody says, I want to do what you're telling me to do, and I am nervous that if this other person that I report to in this other context finds out, they're going to be really upset and that's not going to work. You can make two different guesses, one of which goes to a deeper place. And I'm just going to express the two of them so we see what I mean by that difference. One could be, it sounds like it's really important for you to have a sense of harmony with this person. that is closer to the surface and is not inviting so much vulnerability or intensity. And another one could be, oh, I'm wondering if you have a lot of fear about this because you really want a deep sense of acceptance and security in your relation with people in authority. You feel the difference.
Yes.
Both might be true. And the second one belongs more in an empathy session designed for mutual healing and support than as part of a feedback session. This, to some extent, also speaks back to what I wanted to model Susan. So, Karen, I'm guessing that this is complete for you for now?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Thank you.
One question, too, is I'm a manager, so I would feel vulnerable in being wrong because I'm used to, like, I'm the manager and this is the outcome I want based on, you know, how we have to work together. And if the person comes up with feedback to that or reaction to that, wanting to do something different, sometimes I'll have to stay on track with my goal. So it'll be hard to be empathetic at that point.
Thank you. I think what you're raising is a different challenge, and I want to name it. It's a general challenge about empathy. It's not even specific to feedback. Is that there is often a worry, especially, are you new to nonviolent communication?
I've been doing it for like 6 months.
Okay. The issue that I think you're raising is being able to completely disentangle empathy and agreement. It's as if somehow we are afraid that empathizing with someone sends the message that we agree with them.
That's it. I would like to empathize, but I don't want to backpedal and say, you know, I agree with your excuses about why you can't do this.
So the key is to be able to suspend everything in terms of what the outcome will be. You hold on to what's important to you. You just for a moment suspend the focus on outcome and shift your focus to understanding. With the trust that with mutual understanding, there's more chances that you'll get an outcome that you like.
Okay, so that's key for me. The empathy is focused on understanding.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean agreeing.
Exactly. In order to be able to do that, you also need to let go of the idea that that this is excuses.
Yeah, I know, I have that. Sometimes folks do come up with a lot of excuses, though. I mean, I guess with empathy, you could get to an understanding of what it's really about, though.
Exactly. I have found that if I take people at face value and I'm spacious about it, the truth comes out. Either I see that I was mistaken in interpreting it as excuse, or when they are received with empathic presence, which gives them a sense of mattering, they no longer need an excuse, and they can tell the truth. And it's not like anybody is going to come and say, yeah, that was an excuse, you're right, and I shouldn't have done that. That's not how it's going to look. It's going to look like, you know what, I know that thing, you know, that I said that thing, and that's not really the thing that's most important to me. Really what's most important is this other thing, and then they tell you what the truth is of what blocks them from doing it. Just because you were able to receive fully the level at which they presented it. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, I think I need to practice it, though.
We're going to practice very soon.
Thanks.
If you don't mind, all of you, waiting a second. This is so rich that I want to take a couple so I remember to change my files because you are raising things that I hadn't thought of fully ahead of time, which is part of what makes teaching so yummy because it's interactive and generative. I feel very satisfied with what we have looked at so far in terms of what are the challenges about offering empathy, and I want to start now looking at the how. What I was thinking we could do next is break into groups of three and then do actual practice of empathy. And how I would like you to do that is to have people model responses that might happen in a feedback situation and how you might respond to them empathically. Just try it out and help each other. And here's how I would like you to do it. I'm imagining that at least some of you looked at the materials ahead of time. And if that is the case, then you might remember that I did a little table there where there is a statement that a person might say. Then the next column is what might be the needs behind what the person says. And lastly, a question of how you might respond to it. Now that you have a sense of what the need is, how might you make your empathy guess? So that's what I am proposing that you do, that you just come up with imaginary one-liners that somebody might say. And I will read to you a few examples, and you can practice with them and other examples, and we'll do that for a while and come back to the large group. So let me give you a few examples. One is in a context where it's not a formal feedback. It's like a peer feedback. It could be friend, could be coworker, could be whatever. And the response is, who are you to tell me what to do? Another one is, that's not at all what happened. Another one is, you're absolutely right, I shouldn't have done this. You know, things like this, I'm sure you can generate them from your rich life experience. If you're looking at the table, then pick different examples. You can use the table as a reference for the how and generate other examples that will actually give you an opportunity to work. I would say one person gives the reaction, all of you try to come up with what the needs are. And then you can also discuss how you might frame the empathic response. Give each other feedback. Really get into it. All right. Thank you, everyone. I hope you had a good time. I would like to take some time now to really looking at what has happened, what you learned, what questions you had, and maybe do a little bit of coaching, and then shift to looking at coming up with an action plan. Then let's open the harvest and debrief.
The aha for me in our exercise was that these possible responses that we have as examples sometimes can be just silent. And we have to guess. And the example that comes up for me is I've been in more than one situation of giving feedback where I just get nominal compliance. Responses like, okay, you know, what do you think about this? Okay, you know, would you be willing to do this? Okay. And it's almost like a passive-aggressive kind of thing where they're really thinking, you know, I'm not prepared, I'm overwhelmed, or who the heck are you? In most workplaces, people want to be professional and respectful. And especially if in a position of authority, sometimes I just get the okay.
So did you come up with an empathic response that you liked?
Actually, the group did. We guessed what was going on in my head, which was, you know, I'm really not ready to hear this right now. And any attempt at empathy, like, are you feeling these emotions? I just wanted to run even more. So just giving empathy in terms of choice and respect went a long way.
Yeah. Something like, so you'd like to have choice about when we have this conversation?
Exactly. Well, and this is a tough one because honestly, I know there's probably a lot of people who would just rather not have it at all.
Yeah.
You told me what I need to correct. I heard it. Let's move on. We don't need to process it.
Then I would guess at something else. I would say something like, I'm guessing that you don't trust that there's room for you to participate in deciding the outcome. Is that true?
Yes.
That's, I think, when the shift can start happening.
In the example that I was thinking, there was a real need for autonomy. And at the same time, a lack of safety to tell you how I'm really feeling because I want to be professional.
In general, I find that skipping the feelings completely and really just focusing on making a guess as to what the person wants without necessarily bringing in any emotion is smoother sailing, especially when there's lack of safety.
Any discussion of emotions, I just wanted to get the heck out of there even
yeah.
sooner.
When I ask you, would you like to have more trust that you can really participate in creating the outcome here, that was okay for you.
A bit wordy, and I'm not sure what other words could have done it for me, but the intention, yes.
Because I'm giving voice to something that is not scary to notice. By naming it, I'm already making it okay for you to want it. That's part of what's powerful about the empathy when we focus on what somebody wants. We basically give permission to want. Thank you. Is this complete or is there more? I'm having a sense that you're chewing.
Yeah. For this particular example, the thing that keeps coming up is superficial engagement and then later the passive-aggressive.
Yeah, that means the person lacks trust, and that's why I'm going there.
Yeah, trust, safety,
yeah,
choice.
And I would never guess safety. Guessing safety is too vulnerable for almost anyone outside of a specifically agreed upon mutual support or therapy session. So I will choose others.
Thank you, Mickey.
Sure.
I didn't quite get what you said about the word safety. Could you say more about that?
Yes. What I could say about it is that especially if I am in a position of authority, actually, either way, in the work context, guessing safety is exposing vulnerability. Because asking somebody, do you want safety, is somehow, I'm finding it hard to find the words for explaining. I guess it's kind of like it seems so completely obvious to me that I'm finding it challenging to unpack it. Give me a moment. Why would it be vulnerable?
I think I know what you mean. I'm thinking of a situation now where I felt vulnerable, and if someone had said to me, are you needing safety, it might have implied that there was something dangerous.
Yes, that's part of it. Did this address, even though I didn't say anything?
It's enough for now.
Thank you.
Think about it.
Thank you.
I just have one question about the empathic response for this example that you phrased. Mm-hmm. I think you said one response would be to ask the person, would you like to believe you can participate in the outcome here? And I'm wondering why you put the phrase in there, to believe, instead of just saying, would you like to participate in the outcome here?
I was saying trust, not believe. Would you like
to trust? Okay, would you like to trust you can participate in the outcome here? So your suggestion is to pose what they would like rather than just asking them, do you want to participate?
Let me think for a moment about why I wanted to frame it in terms of trust. If the person is not speaking, I'm trying to guess at why they're not speaking. This was all in the context of the person who is being silent. And so my sense is, if you think about it, why would anybody be superficial or silent or do things indirectly? Why would they do that?
They don't trust that they can be direct, and they're probably vulnerable.
Yeah. So that's why I'm guessing at the level of trust.
Okay. So you're like putting that in rather than just doing the direct, hey, do you want to participate in the outcome here?
If I'm not trusting that I can participate, I would sit here thinking, why is she saying this? Of course I can't.
Okay. That's new for me. I'm going to try that. Because what I tend to do is just say, do you want to participate in this? And then I get a no, it's fine.
Yeah, because you didn't actually speak to this specific concern, I think. And it's also tricky because are you open to them participating? Because this is coming back to what we talked about earlier, that there is a way in which if they have this experience that the outcome is predetermined, why waste their energy on trying to talk with you? So this is powerful
yeah.
feedback for you. I'm wondering if this rings true.
I'm not sure what your question is.
I'm trying to think. And I'm thinking, earlier you said that sometimes you're afraid that if you engage more than you want, then you won't get the outcome that you want.
Yeah, if I do empathy, I won't get the outcome I want.
Yeah, and so what I am saying is that that way of holding the outcome as being so important is the kind of thing that can translate to the person that their input doesn't matter.
The input would matter in the process, but the outcome is, I still need to get the outcome. I have a really tough manager above me saying, it's got to be done. This has to be done. We have a choice about how we do it, but we got to do it.
I totally understand that. I understand the predicament that you're in. What I'm trying to point out is, from the point of view of the person who is not speaking, they are making a wise choice in terms of investing their resources of words, because they know that the outcome is predetermined.
Right, but the process, there's a choice in the process.
The process doesn't matter to them if the outcome is unchangeable. Why would it matter?
Because they have a choice about how they're going to go about doing it.
That choice doesn't matter. If I don't want to do that thing, then it doesn't matter how I do it. Just let's not waste time. Just tell me how to do it. Do you see what
I mean? That's part of where I work, though, is there's some things that have to be done by certain dates, and this person doesn't do them, and so I have to give him feedback. And then he says yes, and then he doesn't do them again.
Yes, so that means that you haven't really engaged ever with what is really keeping this person from doing it on time.
Yeah, I know. I've been trying. So I've really been trying. Like, you know, I say things like, what can I do to help you to take ownership for these things? Because everybody has to do them on the same time, not just you.
That is still you trying to make it happen. What I am suggesting is that there is a whole thing that you don't know anything about, I think, which is what's really going on for this person that's preventing them from doing it on time. Do you know?
Yeah, I do.
What is it?
He actually was able to say it last time. He said he volunteers for too many things and then he gets overwhelmed and then he can't do all of his, he has hard time prioritizing.
So he takes on more than he can handle.
And I keep saying, you got to tell me and manage your time and da-da-da, and he doesn't. He just keeps taking it on. He won't say no, and he even says that too. I have a hard time saying no.
Right. So then it's your work to get him to say no.
That's what I've been trying to do.
When I say that it's your work, is in crude terms, you have to reward him for even the mildest no that he says.
Okay. Right, because I don't want to keep telling him what to do and being the boss. I want him to tell me what he can do, and I'll take it away from him if he can't.
Yes.
But it's hard to get him to speak up. That's the thing. He's speaking up a little more.
Okay, so even if he says even the littlest no to anything, I want you to rejoice.
Okay. He said no the other day. I could give him a follow-up email.
You can say, I'm really, really glad that you said no. That gives me more confidence that I can trust your yes.
That's really good feedback. I can do that with him in an email.
Yeah. So essentially, the reason he says yes is because he knows that you want something done.
I know, because I do. I know I get really very focused.
Yeah, and there is something there in the dynamic where he is indirectly trying to give you feedback.
Okay, and the feedback is?
To make more room for the possibility that things won't happen the way you think they ought to. And to engage with life in a more open way.
Okay, all right.
And I totally understand the difficulty that you're facing. So then, first of all, this can go up. Are you able to say no to your boss?
That's a big place I need to work on, too, because that's a tough one. I am, but it's a lot of work, big conversation, and I'm not always up for it.
Yeah, and then you can also go to your team, to the people that you supervise, and form a sense of shared holding. Here's the dilemma that we have. This is what my boss gave to me. I tried to negotiate with him, and this is as far as I was able to negotiate. So now we have this to do. What are your thoughts about how we can handle it together So there is a togetherness about it instead of you telling them. Then they can come more into taking ownership and responsibility for things because they understand the context. Those are my thoughts.
Okay. I took notes. Thank you.
And in a way, I see that this is kind of like starting to get into the question of how do we create an action plan after the feedback. It's not complete. I would like to come back to it some more, maybe, you know, get more of the details and try to work it out. For the moment, I want to pause because I actually want to hear more about what happened in the empathy from other people. Thank you. Is anyone else willing to share something?
From our group, someone mentioned a reaction from someone getting feedback, the effect, well, this is just something like, you're asking way too much for me to do. I already have too much to do now. I can't do that. And what came up for me right away was just the empathic response to the effect, you'd like me to know that you're feeling so overwhelmed now that you don't have any more resources to do what I've just asked, something like that. But someone else gave an empathic response, and it was based not only on the words themselves, but kind of the energy behind it. So are you saying that you'd really like some understanding, respect for all the work that you've already put in, how hard you're already working on the projects that you're doing right now? Something to that effect, you know, some appreciation for that. And that seemed to be even more compelling or more right on than what seemed to me to be so obvious because it dealt with the underlying.
Yes, and that is exactly the kind of play where, depending on the situation, you might want to stay closer to the words that the person said or go more deeply, depending on your intuitive sense of what's called for. And it sounds like in this case, going a little deeper really met the person more fully. So you'd like to, I guess you'd like to have some mastery in this area.
For me, it would have been riskier for me to go there right away, but I was delighted to see the result.
And you don't have to go to what feels risky to you right away. It's not like an empathic response has to be one line and then you're done. It can be a back and forth. It can be, so you'd like me to know that right in the moment you don't see the resources to do this, blah, 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 and the person says something in response to that, and then you can come back and say, and I bet anything that you also want some appreciation and respect for all the hard work you've already put into it. So that can be a second one. The one doesn't preclude the other. Thank you.
Thank you.
I would like to piggyback on what you just said, that in the handout and you know, in my imagination, you know, I give my empathy guess to the person and they go, oh, yeah, that's right. But it, in the case of our practice group, it did go back and forth and I kept having to dig a little deeper because it was still an emotional edge there. And so I knew we hadn't hit on what was really the issue at all. And I'm like, oh, okay, I guess I'm still going.
Yeah. I really highly recommend doing it because when you get to exactly what the issue is, there is a settling and an openness that happens.
Yeah, and I hadn't done that with a feedback situation. Perfectly happy doing it in a practice group where everybody agrees that we're all okay together. But when there's that chance that, hey, this is not going to be okay here, then it is, like she said, more risky.
Yeah, I guess you got engaged.
Yeah, yes.
I am glad for that. Okay, so with that, I would like to move to the last part from the last time and that we sort of kind of like started kind of like entering it is how do we come up with an action plan? First of all, especially if there is some charge and we've done empathy, it's almost like I want us to be able to be like a little bit of engineers, quote-unquote, meaning if we know what we want and we know who is in front of us and what's true for them and what their needs are and what their capacities are, I'd like us to be able to begin with to come up with suggestions that are not just about what we want, that they're also about what's possible, what's realistic, what makes sense, what's the next step, what can build, rather than do it the way I want it or else I don't know what to say. That's the first thing. And then even if we try to come up with a suggestion that speaks to the other person, again, that might not fly. There might be a response, a challenge, or whatever. And then the goal is to be able to then come up together with something that all of us believe can work. And that is very clear to me, that the more the person receiving the feedback is included in coming up with the action plan, the more likely there is going to be satisfaction. Because if we make a unilateral action plan and the other person doesn't own it, that's when they're likely to sabotage it or do it half-assed or not do it at all. And so I would like to look for a few minutes now at a variety of situations and see how we can work together. Because ultimately, it's either working together or if we don't believe that it's possible to shift, there's no point in maintaining the relationship. So there is something very, very high stakes thing that happens around feedback giving, specifically in the place of the action plan. It's like one of the things that creates the stress around feedback, which is, okay, I can tell you what I don't like. You can hear what I don't like. Now what? What do we do with it? Is this something you can change? If not, how am I going to work with it? If it is something that can change, how are we going to work with it to make it workable for you as well as for me? So that's the general frame. And then I want to look at a concrete situation, maybe one of the things that you worked with in one of your groups. We could take Kathleen's situation or any other. If anybody wants to work with your situation, Kathleen, I'm going to assume that you're one. Anyone else? Let's take Kathleen's situation. You okay with that? I'm assuming that you are because we already started talking about it.
Yeah, that's fine.
So the situation is that you have a person that you assign some aspects of the of a project to, and other people deliver it in time, deliver their part in time, and he doesn't deliver his part in time.
That was a recent example, specific example that happened.
Okay, so I'd like to kind of like invite brainstorming, and for that purpose to occur, I am wondering if one or more people are willing to take on being that person, imagining being that person, which is always helpful when you're giving feedback, to truly imagine the other person. That's the deepest empathic understanding, is really see life from within their shoes. Anybody up for doing that? Because you'll play a role in telling us if a plan is going to work or not. All right, now we got two, three. All right, let's take Carolyn. You are this person, and let us have Kathleen try to propose different things. And this is, we're not doing a feedback session. In other words, it's not how you're necessarily going to respond to her. It's, I want your internal experience as that person about whether or not a proposal will work. And the reason I want that is this is precisely what doesn't usually tend to happen in a feedback session, is that proof. So I want that truth to be surfaced so that we can work with it. Okay, Kathleen, what are some of your suggestions?
So the situation is the due date. You didn't meet your due date. So one of my suggestions is that you let me know if you have too much work on your plate and you have too much to do. Let me know, and we'll take some stuff off.
Okay, and that's something that you have proposed in the past and hasn't happened?
Yeah, he always says, no, I'm fine.
Okay. So here is one general guideline. If you have proposed something in an earlier feedback session and it hasn't happened, it's not likely to happen again by offering it again. Unless there is something else that shifts, there is no reason to believe that this strategy will work now if it didn't work before. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, unless something shifts, it won't.
So in other words, if the person says, I'm fine, I'm fine, again, it's back to the trust. So I am wondering if you can imagine coming up with a plan for how to increase this person's trust that they can really speak the truth to you.
I'm at a loss.
Would okay. it help if I gave a little idea of what immediately came to mind?
Yes.
As soon as that was offered to me, my immediate response was, oh yeah, you know, if I tell what I can't do, it will jeopardize my job.
Yeah.
It really will. You're either not going to give me as much work as I need to survive, or I'm just going to be eased out of the operation totally, or something bad will happen.
Yeah, I know that's what he thinks. I've tried to tell him it's not the case, but I do believe that's what he thinks.
Great. So we know the truth, and he's not telling it to you.
Yeah, I know he believes that, and it makes total sense that that's what he believes.
So the question, and I want to pose it to everyone, I wanted this to be a collectively owned dilemma because we're looking at the kinds of things that tend to happen. Anybody else who is on the call, if you know that someone is this afraid and won't tell you, what is a step that you can propose that you imagine might work? Anybody has any suggestions?
Going back to feelings and needs, I would imagine.
Can you be specific?
I wonder if you're worried that something like, I'm wondering if you're needing some understanding about and support with I'd need refreshing again before I can go on.
What I am hearing from you is that you have a sense that we're not ready for an action plan, that there isn't sufficient connection.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
In that case, sometimes there's only so far that you can go in the actual feedback session. You can't push for more connection than the person is able to provide. Then I would try to think about what would be an action plan to support connection over time. Do you have
yeah.
any suggestions about that? Because that's
yeah.
one of the possibilities that you can do. You want to keep mulling over and I will
yeah.
call on someone else?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I just have a question about that in trying to build trust. I'm wondering if there's room somewhere in there to acknowledge the value they have to the company. The work that they do complete is just really valuable and needed, and reinforce that, and then perhaps say, and I don't know, but it just seems like somewhere that
yeah.
piece in there could help
yeah,
build the trust.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's
sure.
still, so what you're suggesting is for Kathleen to express appreciation, that in itself can be part of the action plan, is to provide appreciation. And I'm curious, Kathleen, do you appreciate anything about what this person does?
Yes, I do, and I do express appreciation. He's definitely needs improvement, though. There's some things that he is able to do, but he definitely
yeah.
needs improvement.
Okay.
In a lot of areas.
Okay, so the truth is that overall you're not appreciating him.
Overall he needs improvement, yeah.
So I want you to hear the difference in the language. When you say he needs improvement, that's an evaluation of him. And when I say I don't appreciate him as much as I would like, that takes responsibility. It's not that there's something wrong with him. It's that what I am getting from him is not what I want.
The work he's doing, I do not appreciate the work that he's doing.
You don't appreciate it enough.
I don't appreciate it for good reasons, though. I don't want to gloss over that.
I never said that the reasons were not good. I just want to locate them in you rather than in him. My sense is that if you're able to locate them in you, you will have more of a chance of getting his trust.
Okay, so I do not appreciate most of the work that he does.
Yeah. So here is, okay, Lorraine has her hand up, so let's go there first, and then I have possibly another suggestion.
It's with a possible suggestion. which would be is once we establish during the feedback session that this person has some difficulties with time management and with saying no because they want to volunteer, one possible suggestion to ask if they would be willing to team up on certain assignments as a duo, and if they would like to select the person of their choice to work with, and that way we hold a group accountable versus an individual. And this isn't just passing off responsibility, but I found for myself and for others sometimes working in more of a team environment, especially if someone is good at time management, somehow we can come into their rhythm more easily. And I might be accountable to a peer versus to a deadline. And sometimes that shifts things.
Let's check with Kathleen. Is that a suggestion that you imagine might work for you and for him?
Possibly. There's only three engineers on the team, though, and I know one doesn't work with other people at all. Mm-hmm. He's just a loner. And the other guy's in India, so I appreciate the suggestion, and I could see how it would work. I'm not sure logistically if it's going to work that well.
So here's one last suggestion that I have, which is wondering if you imagine it would work for you for a period of time to have a regular meeting with him in which you just review. Let's say if you do it once a week, what things he took on in the past week, and what things he completed and what things he didn't, and was it too much, and you assess it together. And you do this regularly over time, and whether you imagine that that might give him a structure in which he can find the possibility of being aware of the limitations and work within his capacity.
We do that. There's really a big trust issue.
Mm-hmm.
Is there another way to work on that trust issue? That's running status, and we do that once a week. I like the idea you came up with more as an action plan to create trust over
mm-hmm.
time.
So do you have any ideas about that? First of all, have you ever named that there's a trust issue?
No.
That would be the first step, is to come back to him and say, you know, I've reflected on this, and it looks to me like maybe there is some way in which you don't trust, you know, that your voice or your experience or whatever would affect the outcome or whatever it is that you think he doesn't trust, and really engage him in trying to find out what would support trust and be open. That's the key, is to be open to whatever he says.
He gets real critical, though, when I open up. So what do I do with that?
He gets critical?
Yeah.
Great.
I know, but I'm not good at taking that.
Okay, so then that's work that you need to do. Because really what I would want to do is to thank him and then hold on to this for next week when we talk about receiving feedback. So that when he gets critical, you can train him to give you the feedback without criticizing you. One more thought is that if you say, let's look at what we can take off your plate, and he says, no, it's all okay, that's a time to express and say to him, you know, Joe, I'm hearing you say that it's okay, and I am not feeling comfortable. I'm not trusting that if we leave it as it is, you will actually be able to do all of it. So I really want your help so that I can feel more confident.
Yeah, that would be great. I'll just own it, say, I'm not trusting, this or something.
And Carolyn, if you can give us any feedback on what, if any, of the suggestions you imagine would work for you as the imaginary Joe.
Getting to the trust thing really makes a lot of sense, you know, from my gut. Initially, I was kind of wishing that, and this may be totally unrealistic, that I had an idea of what would be acceptable. Well, what is the acceptable amount? Tell me when I reach it or,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I have a sense also that there is maybe a verbal message that it's okay for you to do less, and maybe an energy message that says we have to do a lot, and that gap might create stress for him. Curious, Kathleen, if that rings true.
Yeah, that's true, definitely.
Okay, thank you all for another really engaging and rich exploration. I keep having a sense that we're just touching the tip of the iceberg, and that there's so much more to explore. And next time is our last time. Keep practicing this empathy like you did in the small groups. We can do that. Keep practicing that and keep exploring what kind of action plans can address the issue as it finally emerges, which in this case shifted from specific outcome to how do we build trust. Thank you all and good night.